Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Hey everyone, this is Sellers.
And this is Stormy.
And this is Unforgotten,
where each episode will highlight unsolved missing, murdered, and suspicious death cases in Alabama in order to raise awareness and hopefully obtain some answers for victims and their families.
Please remember that any individual referenced in the podcast should be considered innocent until found guilty in a court of law, and any opinions or views expressed in the podcast are solely those of participants. Listener discretion is advised, as some of the content discussed in the podcast may contain violence or graphic descriptions and may not be suitable for all audiences.
Hey guys, Stormy here again with the second half of our interview with Daniela's friend and advocate, Shauna Hayden. A quick reminder, part three of Daniela's episode is being released a week early for subscribers, but on regular schedule, March 4th. A couple reminder notes mentioned in the first half of the interview regarding edits before we get started. We wanted you to know that the content wasn't manipulated. The cuts were for important reasons aside from time. One, there were a few things that we couldn't share publicly, so we did have to make those cuts. Also, both Sellers and Shauna had colds, so we edited out most of the big coughs, sniffs, and sneezes, but you might still hear a couple. Also, an advocate-centered note. As you know, we take all of the cases we share very seriously, and each of them and their families are like family to us. But as advocates, we know it's okay to laugh at ourselves a little, or a lot, to keep our sanity. Please don't judge us when we cut loose once or twice. The episode isn't fancy, just a great talk with someone who cares tremendously for a friend whose life was cut far too short. We hope you find this informative and interesting, and maybe listening to Daniela's story in a different way will spark a memory for someone or compel someone to come forward who can help resolve her case. Okay, here's the second half of episode one, part three, Daniela Vallen's interview with Shauna Hayden.
So, I guess getting back to the point in the timeline that we're in, because otherwise, because we could sit here all night talking about the crap that they should have done and didn't do.
True.
Or that we think they should have done, I guess, you know, subjective. So he gets back. We know from the timeline that both cars, whether it was the same car or a new car that pulled in, both cars leave the Shell station at like 11:24 or something. And then obviously at some point they split off with her going to this vague, more populated area and him going to Dublin. And then he gets there and he says, there's a bartender in the parking lot or something, right? And they find her car. They said they found the phone in the parking lot.
Yeah, the server.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he goes in, calls or texts Mallory, tells her, like, get in the phone, lost Daniela or something like that. So he sends this picture. Is also
isn't that the selfie
to me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But at the same time, like, I'm sure that you probably looked him up on social media. Like, he is
self-involved.
confident.
He's just one of those people that, yeah, I guess you could say confident. And he will dress to not necessarily attract, but like for the attention. And I'm not saying mm-hmm. that like that's not just his style or whatever, but like he's one of those people that's kind of like an over the top.
Yeah.
Maybe not all the time. I mean, I'm sure like that night he wasn't, but at the same time, like, and I'm not saying that it's not weird. I'm just saying it didn't really surprise me.
We're not saying it's weird. Or that it's not weird. It's, you know, personal preference,
you know, I guess. Whatever.
So.
Oh, I'm talking about the picture. I'm saying the picture, like sending the picture is definitely like unusual. But at the same time, when I heard that he did that, I wasn't like, well, that's. Because that's also.
I feel like it would stand out less if it'd been like a Snapchat. Like a quick, because people were using that a lot at the time. And so like sending a Snapchat saying, oh, I'm here, you know, whatever, yeah. She's not here yet. But to like take it and send it in a text message, that is a little different. How long did he wait? Does anybody know?
I mean, I don't think it was long. I don't know if we ever knew like an exact time of how long he waited or whatever, but I don't think it was very long at all.
I guess it probably wouldn't have been long because if we're thinking about it, like that's going to put him back between, you've got the voicemail, so we're going to assume he is the second car because it would have been there at the same time the voicemails right. were made. And so we're going to say what, like it takes him like 20 minutes to get there or something. If they're leaving at 11:20, that's 11:40. And he gets to Always at like midnight. So, I mean, that's going to add some time. So it couldn't have been more than 10 to 15 minutes, right?
Yeah, I don't think it was at all.
Then he gets there and he tells them, hey, I got her phone. She never showed up. What do I do with it?
Yeah. And from what I remember Randy saying, and maybe Denson told Julie this too, I'm not sure, but told him, you know, well, she works at P.F. Chang's. She can just take it up there, which
yeah,
I always thought that was kind of weird too, because Randy was like her initial contact. So if she was going to get in touch with anybody to try to, you know, find her phone or find out if anybody found her phone or whatever, it would be Randy, not Denson. And
yeah,
I don't know. It just would make more sense for Randy to be like, oh, well, let me, you know, let me take it and I'll take it up there tomorrow or whatever, rather than having somebody that doesn't know Daniela at all other than that night having, you know what I mean, showing up at her job with her phone. And it would just be, it would be more appropriate considering just the initial contact that night that Randy keep it instead of Denson keeping it. And I just always thought that was kind of weird too. Cause like, you know, if it was my friend and she didn't show back up, like I wouldn't want to send my other friend who is a stranger to her off with her stuff.
Yeah. That doesn't, especially when you see the messages, the screenshots of the messages between him and Julie, and he's talking about, you know, how
right
worried about her he is and stuff.
Right.
Like, this is somebody that you knew well enough to tell her when she said, well, I'm not really sure about going somewhere where I don't really know anybody that's going to be there, that they have a friendship. So it seems like it would be easier for him to make contact mm-hmm. with her than somebody who doesn't know right. her at all. So that the whole thing is just strange. And then, so what happens from that point though? Like, they talk, he keeps the phone, even though he's been told to drop it off, obviously. But like that evening, obviously Daniela doesn't show up or that late that night. So they sit around at Ollie's and then they're all like, okay, I guess she's not coming.
I guess. I mean,
time to go home.
Yeah.
And he was in this rental car. What happened with it?
He said he returned it when he left Ollie's. Well, yeah. And
he must have caught a second wind. Because he just went from, I'm going home. It's late. I don't feel like going out, whatever, going home. Yeah. To, I'm going to go back to Dublin's and help this girl look for her phone, this girl that I don't really know. And then I'm also going to go hang out at Ollie's for a little while. And then, let me go, just go ahead and stop and drop my vehicle off.
Right.
Maybe at that point, because it's been so much running around, it's kind of like, well, I'm awake. Why not? You know? And it could have been one of those things too, where it was like on the off chance she does contact, I'll still be out, whatever.
Right.
Not knowing him personally, I don't know. You know, and we said this, I think, in our thing that, you know, it sounds like we're being really critical of him And maybe we are, but again, he is
the last person,
as far as anybody knows, to have seen her.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, I didn't know her. So it seems like a lot of effort for somebody that you don't know.
Right.
Yeah.
And so after this happens, do we know whether Randy or Mallory, either one reached out to Daniela to see if she got her phone, or him, Denson, to see like, hey, did you ever get up with her?
Randy, I think, messaged her either the next day or that Thursday and said like, hey, did you ever get your phone? But I don't think that anybody else did, or I don't think if Randy asked Denson about it, he never said anything to us about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, Mallory was completely out of the loop at that point. So, I mean, it really would have just been those two.
And then Hannah.
Hannah texted her the next day and was like, hey, are you alive?
That's kind of eerie.
Yeah, that is very. It's like, whatever happened to, like, not leaving your friends?
Well, you know, she was at work.
Well, I know, but I mean, the other. Like, I guess they aren't her friends, so I guess.
Well, Randy, just like,
I mean.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I think I've said 100 times, okay. You know, like, well, we were talking about it when we were, like, recording the episode the other day, and I would read something, and I would just be like, okay. Yeah. Because it's like, oh. There's so many things that you want to say that stand out, and then it's like, it's just really opinion and conjecture, honestly. But I was like, my mama said, if you can't say anything nice, right, don't say anything at all. So it's just like the best thing that I've got right now is, okay, what next?
Yeah.
Then it kind of just drops off after this, right? Like, there's not, I mean, we know. It ran on the news stations for a while, and then they did the raid over at Julie's
brothers, yeah,
relatives of Julie's, yeah, and nothing came out of that.
Well, and they wanted that to be it so bad. I mean, the way that they did all of that, you would have thought that somebody said that they had seen her personally, seen her with their own eyes, or, you know, something along the lines that would, I mean, the way, yeah, here, that, and that's the other thing too. No, you're not sharing the surveillance from the last time she was seen. You're not giving an accurate description of, you know, what she was wearing or what she looked like the last time she was seen. And then all of a sudden, because somebody that's in jail or on their way to jail says something about somebody else that's either already in jail or on their way to jail,
mm-hmm,
you go in guns blazing. I mean, literally with, you know, busting
an armored vehicle.
Right? They busted down the cattle gate that is at the front of their driveway. And, you know, like, it's not like a, I don't know. It was very, very extreme. They, like I said,
to be fair, the girl made some pretty heavy allegations. Right.
Allegations that were, and you have to take into consideration too, the people that, you know, the things that you're, the people that you're getting these allegations from, you know what I mean? We're talking, mm-hmm, about two people that were struggling with some addictions at the time and kind of tit for tat with each other. And,
you know, maybe it would have been like normally, right, when they get ready to do these, don't they typically like approach the property owner first? Maybe, and maybe not, I don't know, but like to see, hey, can but
I guess relative, so, though,
well,
maybe not.
Looking, you hear, you have these serious allegations from somebody and you have a missing woman, and so you don't know whether or not, you kind of have to take the most like serious measure that you can, because if these allegations are right, then it's possible that the woman you've been searching for is being held hostage, you know?
Right. Oh, and that's the thing. Look, Barton at the time was like, you'll understand, you know, this way, you know, he told Julie, you'll understand why we did what we did when it all comes out and da 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 da. So we waited and we waited some more. And then the story that we got was she said something about something that he said. And, you know, these were things that were done to her, the girl, not Daniela. Mm-hmm. So now we're alleging that, you know, he said it was done to Daniela too. And so, because nothing ever came of that. Nobody in the house ever got in any trouble.
Yeah, I think they were wondering. Charges,
yeah,
right?
And there was nothing. Yeah, they found absolutely zero anything related to her on that property. On, you know, they brought, because there was a handful of people, not a handful, but, you know, the homeowner, his son, and, you know, girlfriend at the time, and then the other son. And then I think there was a friend of the family that was living there too. And they all at the time were detained and questioned and, you know, all that stuff. And nothing ever came from anything that they ever did at that house that in regards to Daniela or anything else for that matter.
And so that happens like in between them finding her. And that's kind of the only, I think the only thing that was publicly made available, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Other than, you know, when they, like the retrieval of that car that was back there behind where the Shell station was. Yeah. They put that out, like, you know, this, we're going to pull this car up out of the water that's, you know, less than a mile from where Daniela Vian was last seen. And that had nothing to do with her. And then
that ended up being like a stolen
car. Yeah. Biloxi, yeah. I'm pretty sure one of the casino things. But, and then the raid happened. I think that was in like September. I might be wrong.
Yeah, I think it was September. Beyond the family doing the vigils and things, there's not a lot of updates.
No
updates. Like there's no additional information comes out.
No, at some point they started that blog.
Yeah. And that ended up at, it was kind that of ended revised.
Up. Yeah. Well, it just ended up being getting full of spam messages. But even the fact that they did that, I mean, they've never done that since then.
Yeah.
They've never created a blog like that where they're like, hey, we're going to, the Mobile Police Department is going to make this page specifically for this missing persons case. And if you have any information or if you know anything, report to here and you can be anonymous. They've never done that ever. Except for with Daniela's case.
And it's not up anymore.
No. Oh yeah. And I mean, even if it was, it literally was full of bots.
Yeah. We get these comments all the time and it's like, click this link to see this live video of whatever, you know? So then what was the story about how her car actually got found?
So you mean the story that they told the public, what they wanted the public to believe, or what they talked about in Facebook comments happening? Because there's two completely different, like, what they put out to the public was that they were at, a dive training, that the dive team was at a dive training and that they, you know, found this image and this is, and that, you know, that's how they recovered Daniela's car or found it. But whenever it went out that her car was found and that they, because they found it the night of May 2nd, that's when it was like public knowledge that her car had been found, but they said that they were gonna, you know, post some police officers there for the night and basically, you know, secure the area so that they could pull it up the next day, you know, with daylight so that they could preserve whatever evidence that they could and blase, blase. So in the comments, the brother of the man who actually found the car says, my brother was out in his boat on his own time and basically was coming back into the, you know, to the launch and had his depth finder on and saw something. So he dropped a flag. And this guy that was on the boat was part of the dive team. Mm-hmm. So then later on, he went out with his personal boat with some better equipment so that he could better see what he had dropped a flag on. And he dove on it and he saw that it was the car with the Pearl Motors tag. And I'm assuming that there were remains inside. And so that's when he alerted MPD, and that's what happened. So I think the original plan was for them to possibly use it as dive training. Mm-hmm. Until he discovered that it was, in fact, not just a car, but a car that also had a missing person inside of it.
I guess that would make sense.
So they go out there, and there's a little bit of confusion about how exactly her car is found, but it ends up being found. And we did talk about this, like, in comparison to the one that they just found in Chickasaw, it was definitely removed from the water in a much better manner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't really understand that one, but okay.
It was really odd.
That was another one where I was like, but okay.
Yeah. Do you know which direction the car came out?
They pulled it out front end first. Like, so basically if the theory is that she drove off the launch, then she backed off the launch unless the water spun her car around. So
was strong enough to actually like
spin it,
twist it. Yeah.
What is it? 180, not 360. Yeah.
Well, you know,
you could find out what the currents were.
The one thing to remember too is that obviously a car is not going to just immediately sink. It's going to go down first. Nose first because of the motor and stuff. So you would think that would probably offset the weight.
Yeah, but we also...
I should not even...
If it went in at the launch, the only thing that really makes sense is if it went in at the launch, would it still... It would... Being its... I cannot talk. With it still in drive, because otherwise, you know the current there. It doesn't pull out. It goes in, like, towards the launch.
And it wasn't long after this, I don't think. Like, I'm not even going to guesstimate on the length of time because I cannot recall. But there was a vehicle that ran off the launch.
Yeah.
And it was a truck.
Mm-hmm. And they air floated it up, too.
But it was right there. Right. Like, it was right beside the launch. It didn't go very far. Okay, and I get maybe it's a little heavier because it's a truck and this was a little bitty car. But where it looks like her car was pulled up is not exactly right by this launch. It's like it's mm-hmm. over a good way. So it's almost like she would have had to have backed off from the parking area.
Yeah, like that ledge, which isn't, I mean, they've since changed it where you can't even...
Now there's
drive
a dock
that
there.
Edge like you used to be able to. Because people would. They'd, you know, back your car up there, your truck up there, or whatever, and sit right there and fish. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then now there's a floating dock there. So
I tried to find, I could have sworn there was an interview somewhere. I thought it was in Lagniappe with Batiste at the time, talking about what the manipulations were inside. Because at first, all they said was, there were certain manipulations inside the vehicle that could have only been performed from inside the vehicle, you know, after it was in the water. And that was, and I remember reading this and I just cannot figure out which news place I read it at. But and maybe it was just not as much detail as what I thought it was, because I read one the other day and it was somewhat descriptive, but it was like, you know, the back window's down. And I think initially they'd said the back window was down like 2 inches mm-hmm. or something. But if you go look at those photos that
it's
the
like
station shared, it's definitely more than that. And that could be from the fact that it was under the water for so long. Like maybe it was slipping, or maybe it slipped once they were pulling it out. But at least from what it looked like at the time that it came out, it was over halfway down. And then Which you would think, if she were alive, she would have went out the window.
Mm-hmm. Well,
because she would have fit out the window.
That's like
she
the other lady in Chickasaw. Her window was busted out.
All of her windows, except for like two, were gone. Like the driver's side window was up, and then the back panel, side panel window on the passenger side, I think, was still intact. But it didn't look like there were any other windows.
So yeah.
Also in an odd location. But I would like to know, like, how was her car found? Was it in park? Was it like for her door
right.
locked? Because that was one of the things, was that Daniela's doors were locked. And so
the car was in park. Said, the e-brake was engaged.
The keys were in the ignition.
In the auxiliary position.
So she hits the water, turns the car off, puts it in park, pulls the e-brake. And okay, I'll give them that if she hit the water, some of the electrical stuff could have stopped working. So she, if that's the case, then maybe the doors don't automatically unlock. Maybe that's what caused some of the, because from nothing I've read said that any of the windows, other windows, were manipulated in any kind of manner, just the one. And so if all of the electrical stuff has stopped at this point, it's not like it's automatically going to put her key into auxiliary. That doesn't happen. It doesn't automatically turn your key. But she managed to get the back window down. I mean, assuming that it wasn't already down for some reason. Because that has always bugged me, that only one window was down. Because if your theory is that she did all of this in a panic, then why weren't any of the other windows adjusted? And then they pull it out and you get the video, the pictures from the auction site, and the steering wheel column is broken and the steering wheel is basically resting on the driver's seat. And I think the back passenger seat belt's like missing completely.
Right.
At what point did the steering wheel break? Is that something that could just like rust over time?
I don't know.
Was it not broken to begin
with? No, she just bought her car that day.
No, I mean, like, when they pull it out, is it something like it wasn't broken when they pulled it out, but it could have been, so it's something that could have been broken in the aftermath, like when they were, you know, doing their investigation, their forensic analysis or whatever.
And what had to have done it when she was still in it.
And what would have been great would have been if we could have got those FBI records with the black box data, because that would definitely tell you.
Yeah.
Did she hit the gas? Did she hit the brakes? How fast was she going at the time? Because it didn't look like, from the pictures anyway, that her airbags deployed, right?
No, not to me. So you got me looking through the paper, because I have the papers that she was published in. And I just haven't gone back and looked at this, but I'm going to have to send you a picture of this picture that's in the paper, because it literally shows them, like, right there off the ledge. Like, this is before they pull her car up. This is when, like, they're still.
Because if I remember right.
Okay.
Then what they said was there was a drop off or something.
Yep. Right, listen, there. Listen.
You have 5 new messages. Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine.
stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Okay, this is what they published. The discovery of her vehicle was made after an MPD dive crew was using sonar to map the bottom of the boat launch to share data with Sara Lamb Police Department about a week earlier. Suspicious images were observed from the data. Dive teams visually verified the sonar findings on Thursday in the water. Human remains were confirmed inside the submerged car. Later that evening, the automobile was revealed as being owned by Vianne. At approximately 2 p.m. Friday, the Chevy Cruze was removed from the site, Sarah Land's Walter Cofield City Park boat launch, and moved to an undisclosed site for more intensive evaluation. The vehicle will be at a more secure location and slowly and methodically examined in a more controlled environment, said Batiste. This is an unusual scene because the vehicle was found in water, estimated at least 20 to 30 feet deep. Working a crime scene in water can be extremely difficult. The police chief noted all precautions must be taken to carefully preserve evidence. If we go to court, we won't miss anything, he added. Securing the site and raising the vehicle while keeping evidence intact proved difficult almost from the discovery. Police closed Sarah Land's boat launch to the public. Raising the automobile required hours as divers recorded the sunken vehicle from all angles and took rigging precautions not to compromise evidence and human remains, which may have been underwater for months. On May 15th of 2019, so that one that I just read you was from the Wednesday, May 8th edition of the Call News. So this is a week later, May 15th. Daniela Vianne, police say death of woman may be accident, not foul play. So 12 days. And here's the thing, the body is likely Vianne's, but a definitive identification has not yet been made by state examiners. But your headline says, not foul play. Alrighty. I was trying to find what you were talking about.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about, I haven't actually zoomed in on the picture of the flag in the water when they're just standing on the edge of the boat launch.
Yeah. That picture is crazy.
That's like way over. I didn't think it was that far over because they usually have the picture from the other point of view.
Yeah. Well, there's like, okay, so there's a photo. It's from June, but it's in Lanyap. And it's a photo from like behind the crime scene tape. And you can see the divers out in the water. Like it's blurry, but you can see it because the focus really is the crime scene tape, but and everything else is blurred out. But they're standing on the ramp when they take this photo. And so you can tell that the boat and where the flag is out there is not at the end of this ramp.
No, not at all. I mean, it's like, if you had the width of the boat ramp, it's at least that far over, if not further, you know, like a whole other width of it.
I did not think this was the story that I was looking for. So this article says,
it's funny. I just opened up to the actual Laniap article.
And this might not be the same one that you're looking at, but it said,
yeah, it's got the blur, but go ahead, background.
Okay. So, well, there's a couple different ones. This one is from May 14th, and it says, Vianne and her vehicle were missing from July 17, 2018 until May 2nd when police divers found her blue 2014 Chevy Cruze submerged in Bayou Sara near the public boat launch. It says Chevrolet, but it's habit to say Chevy. And then it just says, you know, inside was the body of a deceased adult female. They have not officially confirmed it to be her, but they said the physical evidence suggested it was her who the divers found. It said her family and friends have previously said Vianne did not know anyone in the area and wouldn't have had a reason to be there in the middle of the night, roughly 17 miles from where she was last seen. Batiste also said, at this point, there's nothing to indicate anyone else was with Vianne when her vehicle entered Bayou Sara. Public Safety Director James Barber said there were also aspects of how the car was found in the water to indicate it was an accident, noting that the windshield wipers were on and one of the windows was open. I forgot about the windshield wipers.
Yeah, I didn't remember that either.
He acknowledged it's possible someone staged the scene to look like an accident, but said police feel that that is highly unlikely at this time. And then I thought it was like a odd comment that Batiste said, you know, he didn't want anybody, the public, to think that there was someone going around abducting women, but then said, I'm not here to debate what the viewing audience says, but I'm here to reassure them that if anything at any point suggests foul play was involved, we won't hesitate to use every resource available to us to bring the persons, that's plural, responsible to justice. Again, I focus a lot on the words, and maybe I shouldn't, but I think it's important.
Oh, I just came across something in the Laney app. The one from, this one says that May 8th to the May 14th episode, or episode edition, whatever. And it says, it was basically where they were trying to say that they were using that area for future training.
Mm-hmm.
But I never caught this before. About 40 feet out from the public boat launch, he noticed something strange deep in the water and marked the location. So 40,
and they're saying
40 feet from the launch.
40 feet out, 20 to 30 feet mm-hmm. down, because it supposedly was like a, I don't know, a drop off or whatever. 40.
But you know what? Maybe 40 feet from the boat launch, but not 40 feet out.
Oh, from the, yeah, true. From the boat launch, 40 feet from the ramp? Or 40
feet
from the
bank? About 40 feet out from the public boat launch.
Okay, so that's going to be.
So that's subjective. Yeah. Okay. Because there's no way that if you look at it from the picture from up on the.
I need to go watch some YouTube videos where they do these experiments to see how vehicles go down in the water.
Yeah, because I know. I was actually, I was looking when you guys were talking. I was trying to find one, but.
I know they're out there because I remember watching, it was when, I think it was.
Is it the.
Keely?
Oh, yeah. What's her name?
The one that was like supposedly leaving a party.
Yeah, and they found her car like out in this lake mm-hmm. or whatever.
Yeah.
And.
Rodney.
Yes. And it seems like there was some videos that went around at that time. And it may have been Adventures with a Purpose that did kind of showing like this is what would happen to a car if it went in the water. Because the thing about hers was like, how are all these people at this party and none of them heard this car go in the water?
Yeah.
Because it was in kind of a weird location. But same thing.
Keely's car came out rear first. As a side note.
Oh, here's a good, strong Shauna quote. Whoever did this or knows about it can't hide for long. It's all catching up to them between the police department and the diligence of her friends and family. We will find out who did this and make sure that Daniela, Cora, and her friends and family get justice. They updated it to include your quote. You're so well spoken. Okay, it says, once they found the vehicle, I actually went up there after dark to get an idea of what it would look like driving in the area, and I saw how quickly you could find yourself driving off into the water. It's my understanding that there's only 2 to 3 feet before that boat ramp drops off around 10 feet. We believe she might have realized she was in the water, but a lot of things in the car are electrically powered. But a lot of things in the car are electrically powered. Things like the door latches immediately become inoperable. All of Vianne's personal belongings, including her purse and cash, were left in the vehicle, which Batiste said ruled out any kind of robbery. While there was no indication of any kind of physical trauma, Batiste acknowledged advanced decomposition made detecting some kinds of potential injuries impossible. He offered no explanation for how she might have wound up in Bayou Sara. Yeah, I totally forgot. I mean, maybe that's why, maybe I just pulled from all the different articles. Maybe it wasn't one specific one that I got all the details about how her car was exactly found. It was just kind of piecing it together from various articles because there were a good many news stations that were covering this at the time. I mean, it was kind of like it kind of dropped off there for a little bit before they found her car, and then it comes right back up because it's a big deal, but because it's not close. I mean, it's obviously within driving distance, right. That you could get there within a shorter period. It's not like it's going to take you days to get there, but it's not in a common area. It's not, I mean, a lot of people didn't even know this boat launch was back there. I've talked to people even recently, they're like, I didn't even know that was back there until this. And when you pull it up and look at the Google Maps, there is not one single road to get to it that you drive straight down. Like you could have accidentally turned on this one road and just, I mean, because it does dead end into the water. There's no like warning there. It's just like, boom, you're done. And, but it, you have to make a series of turns no matter which way you go, even though there's like a couple different ways you can get back to it. You still have to make a series of turns to get to it. And it's kind of one of those things where like, if you don't know where you're going, it's going to be really hard to accidentally wind up on it. Like, I've been to that boat launch, and even knowing where it's at, I've still missed a turn. But, and I know, I mean, I know that, you know, that's kind of the whole point of being lost. You end up in places that you're not supposed to be in. But again, that is so far removed from where she was at and out of the way that it just seems so bizarre. And I get weird things happen. It's just hard to believe. And you have a pretty interesting theory about how she wound up there.
About her car being towed there.
Mm-hmm. Like you actually had somebody bring a tow truck up there, right?
Yep, before they, and we couldn't have done it at any better time because it was like literally probably 2 or 3 months later that they put that floating dock up.
And so but, what did they tell you about it?
Oh, he told me that he, that they're, I mean, that's what he thought happened was that. So before this even happened, before I took a tow truck driver up there, I kind of reached out to some tow truck drivers and I was like, hey, you know, like what do you do when you, what is like a protocol for when you load a car onto like a rollback, a flatbed tow truck? Mm-hmm. And, you know, they obviously they hook it up and they pull it up there, but before they leave to secure it, they put it in park, make sure that it's in park and they set the e-brake. A lot of times they'll leave the keys in the ignition in the auxiliary position so that the flashers will work while it's on the bed of the tow truck. And so those things obviously matched up to some of the, you know, manipulated factors in her car. And when I asked them, you know, how easy is it? How easy is it to get, you know, a car off of a tow truck that's in park or with the e-brake engaged? And every one of them told me that it's something that they do all the time. You know, not every car can be put in a neutral or, you know, driven onto or off of a tow truck that they, a lot of them will keep like a bottle of dish soap or use motor oil or even some water just to get kind of loose traction behind the tire. So once they, you know, either start like loosening the chain to let it go, it catches whether it be the oil or the soap or the water and kind of starts sliding on its own as opposed to, you know, being chained, like pulled with a chain and that they will, what they call like, kind of wiggle the handles where it's like kind of like a shake off, you know, if you jolt something hard enough, something's going to come off of it. And so I finally reached out and found somebody that would be willing to meet me down at the launch and, you know, kind of told him my theory. And when we talked about, you know, how her car was found and how they pulled it up and where it was found in the water, where they started pulling it up and all that, he was like, it's definitely possible that that's what happened. And then, so I had him like back the truck up to that ledge and lower, so there's a bar under a flatbed tow truck or a rollback that like kind of supports the bed when it comes down, because you know it tilts back and forth and up and down and all that. So he backed up right there to the ledge, dropped that bar right there. There used to be like a little stairwell there. There was like 2 or 3 stairs that went down into the water, and put that bar right there and then slid that bed out over the ledge and into the water, almost exactly where her car was pulled up from. And it wasn't, like I said, wasn't long after that they put a floating dock there. And that's just like the car too. You know, I went and sat in probably at least, I'm going to say 8 to 10 different Chevy Cruzes just to kind of play with the buttons. And, you know, the whole, when you throw it into park, you know, normally most on the, on these newer cars, like really kind of 2000 and newer, not all of them, but most of them, when you put your car in park, the doors unlock. When you put it in drive, they lock. It's like a safety thing. And obviously it wasn't her car that I sat in, but on the windows, all four of her windows had automatic buttons. So like, you know how normally it's just the front two, when you just kind of one touch, they just go down. Well, all four of hers did that. So, you know, if that was what they said, you know, it was accidental that that back window was rolled down like it was, you know, her trying to roll a window down, then, or why didn't it go down all the way?
Why didn't all of them go down? And going back to that whole electrical thing that, you know, if it had put in park after she hit the water, it's possible that as soon as it hit the water, like those electrically powered items would have stopped working. But what, I guess that the same would go for if she was panicking and hitting the buttons, because what was kind of interesting about the Cruze, I've never seen this before, and it, maybe it's in other vehicles too, but her lock and unlock buttons were over like by the radio panel.
Her lock button? Right? Yeah.
Like no, they were like on the door panel. Yeah. It was like underneath like the, like over actually,
yeah,
oddly enough, the emergency brake.
By like, I mean, the radio or the air. Yeah.
And so it was like, well, wouldn't you have expected those to be on if she's like just, you know, panicking, hitting these buttons? Wouldn't the emergency flashers also have been on? But I don't know at that point in time without the black box data, and I don't even know if the black box data would indicate that. It's not like the car's cranked, so that would they have known even whether or not those were engaged? I'm assuming the reason they know that the windshield wipers were on is because maybe they were in the up position. Or the maybe the handle, like the little, what would you call that? A wand?
A control arm.
You know, lever. Control that turns them on and off.
There you go. It's my magic. Yeah, I know. If only like, people knew how to use the magic wand for their blinkers, that would be absolutely lovely.
Better. It's kind of magical.
Yeah, I like wand too.
that would be great, actually. Half the time they don't. fortunately, they are not magical. They do not automatically read your mind. Like maybe it was in the on position, because you know if you have them on where they're automatically going back and forth continuously, it's
well. See, mine has a spin thing
where if you just do the quick like one time and you're done, you push down on it most of the time.
That's one thing I didn't mess with in her car, or and not in her car, but in the Chevy Cruze testing.
I have a spin thing on mine too, but I think I feel like somebody just.
Yeah.
I don't really know what the spin thing's for.
2014.
Like, here I am, 38 years old, and I think it's for how fast you want them to go.
See, mine turns on. Mine doesn't. I have to, like, turn, like, a thing on my lever, not actually, like, turn my lever up or down.
Yeah.
I have, like, okay, a knob on mine.
Now I'm going to have to think about this. I think that's how mine is too. I think it's like I have the magic wand there, and yes. I think that's like my clicker. My blinkers, and then the end of that is like you twist it, and you can twist it one direction, and it just like it sprays the water up on your windshield, and then you twist it the other way, and it's like there's like two or three clicks where there is no happy medium. You either get extremely slow or way too fast. And
they're about to fly off my windshield.
Yeah, but there's another little spinny thing on there that has little lines. And I think it's like, it's probably supposed to help you find that happy medium. I think. I don't know. I
can't. Are you sure it's not your back?
So,
do you not have a windshield wiper on the back?
Yeah.
No. I do have a windshield wiper on the back. This is not that.
Okay. Hers.
I don't ever use the one on the back.
So hers has a spinny thing.
Magic wand.
Nah. Yeah. I'm looking at a picture of what would be her windshield wiper thing. And she has a, yeah, it's got a spinny thing and it's got a high, low, intermittent, off.
These
and
are then, some overly technical terms of reason. And I know that it's going to go way over somebody's head.
We got a spinny thing. We got a clicker. Got a magic wand.
And then it's got the middle thing for intermittent. So.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Spinny thing. Yep. But yeah, I don't think that will, that would be really hard to manipulate if you were in a panic. I mean, I can't remember how to use mine when I'm calm.
Well, we've already established that I don't know how to use mine.
Actually, windshield wiper switch control lever. So five words. That's really hard. At least the Chevy Cruze is.
That's way too complicated. For like one of the smallest features on your vehicle, it has the longest
and
name
you have
ever.
Like, you know, you have like an engine.
Yeah. Okay, so they do the autopsy. They do the all of these things: the DNA. They do the forensic test. They release the car because it was financed, and they said they had to give that back. I guess for insurance purposes. They confirm through the DNA that it. Is Daniela, but then
yes,
they didn't release an autopsy or anything. You requested that from the Department of Forensic Sciences. And, you know, something that was interesting about it was that she was dealing with this, the complications and the heavy bleeding. And yet there's no mention in the autopsy of underwear, which you would presume she would have had because it talks about she has her t-shirt on, but it's, you know, the back of it is almost completely preserved. And then
socks and shoes. Yep.
She had a bra and leggings. And so that stuff is still present. So it's not like it just completely disintegrated or deteriorated.
And it would have inside of the pants.
It would have. Right, I would say it would be kind of protected because it's inside her clothes. But there's no mention of underwear. There's no mention of sanitary products. And we all know those are not biodegradable because you get told about them all the time. Don't flush them. So where are those things? And then, so it, the shoes she has on are different than what anybody was actually looking for because I mean, and maybe in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't really matter. But again, it goes back to when you're trying to be accurate, she had on, according to all the reports, black high-top Converses. And now here are these shoes that, like, I don't think anybody
would Right. And, well, and, like, she's not, she wasn't, like, the athletic shoe type. Like, I don't know that I ever saw her. Like, she was a high-top Chuck. Or, you know, low top chucks or boots or, you know, like flats or not, I mean, not athletic tennis shoes. Now, depending on what their description of athletic is, if it's just, you know, tennis shoes that are multicolored, then okay, I can, that makes sense. But, you know, when you think athletic shoes, you think like Nike or Adidas or Reebok or like running shoes or something. You know what I mean? Like something like that. Not.
Yeah.
Not. And the thing was, too, when they went through her stuff at the apartment.
It's just that it says pair of green blue shoes.
Yeah. Oh. Well, her black Chucks were missing. Like they weren't in her belongings at her apartment. And that was like that was like a staple of her, you know, like, you know, you probably have your favorite pair of shoes.
Yeah.
So,
oh, it does say the by athletic shoes. Like it's talking about the shoes. At the top, it says when first viewed, the body is dressed in the remnants of a shirt and black pull-on pants, a black lace bra, and in a pair of green blue shoes. The front, The fabric of the front and sides of the shirt has deteriorated such that only the black thread seams of the collar, sleeves, and waist of the shirt remain. The posterior aspect of the shirt is still preserved and has a printed logo on it. A black elastic hair tie holds the hair into a ponytail. And then when you get down a little bit further, and I'm not going to read all of this, one day her daughter might want to listen to this. It just says there are athletic shoes on her feet. And actually, now that I'm looking at that, it doesn't say there are socks. I guess I just imagine that. According to this autopsy report, you know, she's, so there's no sanitary products, there's no underwear, different shoes. And then as far as the toxicology, all it says is they took tissue samples from her liver. It said the ethanol result came back as negative, and then the drug test came back as none detected. So what's the difference? I would like to know what the difference is in the two. Like, is none detected the same as a negative?
No.
I didn't think
so. It means,
like,
it would mean that they couldn't conclusively say with a test they ran.
Like, we didn't detect any, but it's still a possibility.
Yeah.
And so then, and that was kind of it. It was just like, okay, well, we found the car. Looks like it was an accident. We're done.
Pretty much.
Okay, here's what Batiste said. Was prior to that, Batiste said investigators had gone bumper to bumper to recover any possible evidence related to the case. He also confirmed reports police were able to recover the event data recorder, which is sometimes known as a black box, from the vehicle and turn it over for digital analysis. Asked why the case is still considered open, if police believe Vian's death was an accident, Batiste said it isn't uncommon for cases without a definitive cause of death to remain open even when police have a strong theory about what may have happened. The cause of death was determined to be most likely accidental, but because there is no definitive answer, it will always remain open. Batiste said, if someone could bring forth evidence, we would look into it, but because there is somewhat of an undetermined status, it will always be considered somewhat open. And so,
I somewhat don't believe that.
He said, we poured every resource in this case we had available to us as a department. He said, if there's anyone who comes forward with new information, we won't hesitate to look into it. And he said, Batiste did not offer any explanation for how Vian might have wound up in Bayou Sarah that night. He did say police are more than willing to investigate any new lead in the case. And so, to me, okay, he says, even if they have a strong theory about what may have happened. So that kind of insinuates that they have a strong theory. Okay, well, it was an accident. What is your strong theory for how the accident occurred? And what about it outside of the fact that the doors are locked? Because there's other things there that could kind of counterbalance that, I think. Like, what about it makes you think that it's an accident? Because again, if she's alive when she hits the water, and I guess this would go back to like, what was her state of mind at the time? Because if the back window is down, then the back's not sinking as fast as the front is. Wouldn't she have tried to get out the back? And wouldn't she have been able to get out the back? Before,
but you also have to take into consideration the shape that she was in when you heard her on the audio at the show, because in that shape, you're not making it from, you know, government in 65 to Bayou Sarah and Sarah Land without a trail of destruction.
Or somebody else driving her car.
You know, and again, going back to, I know it sounds like we were being overly critical, or maybe we were being overly critical of the people's actions that were with her that night, that I'm not saying that anybody that was with her was responsible for it, but kind of like this idea that has always kind of like bounced around in my head about it was that whatever happened was accidental. Like, that part probably was an accident. Whether it was, you know, that she was drinking and taking the pain pills, and that didn't go well because she was already having these complications and things. And like, you know, the pain pills are going to deaden your senses anyway. So like, is it possible that it was just a very bad mix of things that caused her to maybe overdose, or did somebody intercept her along the way? You know, was she something put in a drink that she had somewhere, you know, that whatever yeah. actually happened was probably an accident.
Yeah, I definitely.
And then it was with you there. I mean, I've mode.
Kind of thought that too, especially ever since she was found, because, you know, Sarah Lynn was never on the radar. It was never brought up in conversation, yeah. never, you know, it wasn't somewhere she was familiar with. So to think that it was somewhere where she would have driven even accidentally, because she wasn't like, you know, again, this was the first day she had this car. She hadn't had her own car for over 2 years. Not to say she hadn't yeah. driven, you know, but hadn't driven on her own with her own freedom, with no, you know, I guess, agenda. But she wasn't comfortable driving on the interstate. So even to follow somebody on the interstate, I mean, yeah. and then to drive 17 miles down the interstate somewhere, you know, where you aren't familiar with, and then that back there is just not, that's very unusual.
Mm-hmm. And then it kind of goes back to, okay, you making the comment about she didn't really like driving on the interstate. I mean, that would be almost reflected in the fact that if you look at her GPS, she was driving, it says mm-hmm. West Interstate 65 Service Road North. I don't know if maybe the GPS, I don't know exactly about that, but right. it was 35 miles an hour. And then she gets on I-65 and it's 49 miles an hour. And the max
when it's 65,
53 miles an hour.
Right.
And so like, that's yeah. that's on the interstate. So most people do 70 or more, actually, because some people have been blowing by me lately. Either she wasn't in a state of mind that she needed to be driving, so this was like a overcorrection. Right. Like, I'm going to drive really slow because I don't need to be. Because we know she sent that text that said, happily drinking a sports bar, should I drive or whatever. And so was it like she probably knew she shouldn't be driving, so she was being extremely cautious?
Which a lot of people do.
Yeah.
They don't even realize they're doing as slow as they are.
Or is it that, like, I don't typically like driving on the interstate, so, you know, let me slow down because it makes me nervous. But I go back to that right. audio. If that is her in the beginning, kind of doesn't sound like her in the end, but I don't know on the second one.
Right, coherent.
But it's two very different. Is that why one is very clearly sober? I mean, clear, yeah, coherent, clear. You can mm-hmm, understand yep. everything. Not that first person. And so if that's the person that was driving, 53 is pretty good. Like, she probably couldn't even see the speedometer to know how fast she was going. And to add on top of that, if you were that right. under the influence, how did you make it that far for that accident? Like, without having an accident prior to that.
Yeah.
And so it just, there's so many things that are just like, they're so strange. And then you pair that with the fact that even now, if you
well, and that's the thing, everything's still so secretive. Anything. Why? If it's an accident, then show it.
Mm-hmm. Like, you, that was one point that we made the other day was, you know, if the point of withholding the records is the fact that there are allegations or whatever towards people who were either ruled out or, you know, it was determined they weren't involved in any way, you redact that information. The sensitive information, you black it out. But you attempt to at least put out something. I mean, no, they're not required to. If you know that this is something that is concerning to the public, the people that you serve, I guess that's another thing where people don't like being criticized. They don't like people looking at it to say like, oh, well, they could have done this, or, oh, they didn't do that. And here we are doing it anyway. But it just seems like it would answer a lot of questions. And for the whole point of this is that for families that are really just still in the dark, okay, you're saying it's an accident, but we don't quite get it. Can you help it? Can you explain it to us a little better? Why not? Where is the harm in that? I remember reading something somewhere. Obviously, it wasn't in the Lane yet, but I remember there being a quote from Batiste at the time saying something to the effect of, like, it was still an open investigation, but it was an inactive investigation. And
well, and that's what's, you know, everything's so secretive. The surveillance, any of the surveillance, what she was, you know, seen wearing, the thing from that night, but they drug the public through everything leading up to mm-hmm. finding her, you know, this, mm-hmm. we're pulling this car out, we're raiding this house, you know, right, let's do this blog, mm-hmm. and then it all happens, and, well, we think this looks like an accident, thanks.
Here's a blog.
That's all.
Yeah. And
yeah.
Even down to when they first put out, they were like, she was last seen in the 3500 block. There were no landmarks. So you had to go Google the block of government to figure out where exactly it was.
Well, and they told Julie that there was no surveillance.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And we talked about that too, because I had came across it in one of the things mm-hmm. was that she had asked them about surveillance and they said, oh, there is none. And then NBC 15 drops it. And she is like, what the hell? I thought you said there was none.
She called them and said, wait, you said there wasn't any. And that's when they called NBC and was like, take it down immediately. And that was it.
And we actually, it's one of Daniela's friends, Brittany Irving.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
She actually has that posted on YouTube.
Right.
And it's a recording of a recording. Because the reporter that got it is actually, you can see the reflection of her cell phone in the thing, but you can't. So it's not great. The recording of the recording is not great. I'll give them that. Like, that's probably one of the reasons why they didn't want it up was because it was, there wasn't a whole lot that you could see other than mm-hmm. like you can see the headlights coming in, but that ends up, people start seeing what they want to see. I guess when you have stuff that's like not really clear. And so if you have people that are like seeing something that's like totally not accurate, because there were like theories on what was going on in this video floating around on like web sleuths. And I think they ended up like saying, hey, we're not talking about this video anymore because, you know, you can't tell anything. And in the forums that have been made on Facebook. And so people are talking about like what they see happening. And there are some things that are like, so far-fetched, because if you actually go out and look at the Shell gas station and the way it's set up, like it couldn't possibly be the way that they were describing it. So I can kind of understand from that point that one of the reasons they would want to take it down was because you couldn't see that much in it. And so to keep that just guessing out of it or imagining, people see things and they imagine like, oh, I think I see somebody over here. And that looks like my neighbor over here who had literally nothing to do with it. Maybe they just lived in that more populated area. Who knows? That might have had something to do with it. But the thing is, they had access to the original. And so you have to assume that the original was at least semi better than what the recording was. But they did let NBC 15 leave up that timeline for, I guess, anybody that would have been driving through the area at the time. And so if they didn't have a problem leaving up the timeline, because I think that was really the first confirmation of like where she was seen, other than that very vague block, generic block.
Right. There's two different bars that she was in and out of. So, I mean, there's got to be,
yeah,
one of those bars has got to have a camera that at some point caught her.
Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that stood out too was the fact that in Batiste's press conference, he said, I think it was his press conference. It was either a press conference or a statement that he put out. He makes a statement about she was last seen occupying her car.
Not driving it.
That is not not right. the same thing as, you know, she was last seen driving her car. And so was there this idea at the time that possibly somebody else was driving her car? And if there was, what gave them that idea?
Right. Tyler, who knew Daniela better than anybody, when he listened to the audio, you know, there's that part where everybody kind of has their theory about what she's saying, and everybody's theory is kind of different until, you know, whatever, whatever. Tyler says that she is saying, I'm trying to wave at her. So let's just say, you know, she is trying to meet somebody there, and in her shape, she's, you know, tired and
I could hear that
lethargic, and that's what she manages to mumble out. Well, now that's the other, you know, female voice. Mm-hmm. We don't know who it was, whatever friend she was meeting or whatever. And maybe because, you know, we do know that she might've been trying to get Vyvanse or Adderall or whatever that night. Maybe Denson, because here's the one thing I did always tell Julie, we don't know what Denson told the police. You know what I mean? We just know what Denson told Julie. So Denson could have told the police a different story. Could have told them the same story.
Right. I think I've seen you post about this. So it's okay. I think I can say this.
Yeah.
I think it's in the group that you are more at. Because there were a bunch of groups at one time on Facebook for it. And most of them, I think, have been archived and no longer active. There is still one. And you talk about polygraphs.
Julie, Tyler, Randy, and
so people were Denson, given. We know Hannah. At least some people were given polygraphs. We don't know who it is.
I want to say that that's
at least
all. Patrick may have been given one, Julie's husband at the time, but I'm not 100% sure on that. But yeah, I mean, they polygraph everybody that was either with her that night or close to her at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hannah, multiple. And yeah.
Somebody failed theirs.
Yep. Right? She failed three, and that they told her after she failed the third one that she was, you know, their main suspect, and that they knew that there was, you know, more to it, and that they knew that she had taken the money from the apartment. And
now, how much money? I guess that was one thing that I don't think we touched on. They go in after she's missing to search for her apartment. And so, at least by Hannah's account, she went by Daniela's apartment multiple times so that she could see if Daniela's car was there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or if Daniela was there and she wasn't. And then eventually she goes into the apartment and she makes... She tells somebody something about taking some pages out of her diary or something that she didn't think Daniela would want people to see. And then I think there was like some discrepancy over how much, like maybe she took some cash.
So she told some people that she worked with that she took $1,200 from Daniela's apartment. And whoever she said it to apparently maybe thought, you know, a little bit more into it. And from what I understand, had taken it to the manager, you know, not the money, but gone to the manager and said, hey, you know, this is what Hannah said. And so the manager, who also maybe didn't feel so right about it, told the detectives. And so that was one of the things that they, you know, I guess you could say a lead that they had on why they kind of either were, you know, looking more into her or why they proceeded to, because it's not very typical of to polygraph somebody three times.
Right.
And I mean, I don't know why that happened, but.
Well, I guess if you're not passing them, then there's a question about like, aren't you passing
them? Right.
And if you're not passing them and like, okay, so. There's a reason polygraphs aren't admissible in court, and part of that is because some people are really good at maintaining their composure, and they pass them with flying colors regardless of whether or not they're lying.
Right.
Some of it is that people get so damn nervous, it doesn't matter whether they did anything wrong or not, they're going to fail it anyway because they're like, you know, pouring sweat and jittery and all this stuff, because they're like, my God, they just hooked me up to all these things. And now I'm in this truth spotlight, and I know I'm not lying, but do they know I'm not lying? Like, what? Oh my God, what did that do? So if, obviously there are reasons why they're not admissible.
Right.
I mean, if you've had to take three, then you would assume that by the third one you pass it, because you're, you know what's coming, you know? And I guess part of it would be for the, to continue doing it is like, one, it's who's asking the questions, what questions are they asking? Because you would almost think that like each time they do it, like they know what they're, what you would think they would have some kind of idea about, okay, this is what she's lying about. And so they, you would think they would ask more targeted questions. And so was that the thing, that each time they polygraphed her, they were asking a little bit more targeted questions, and it was just getting a little bit harder? Or like, I mean, it would be really interesting to know, just because I'm curious about stuff like that in general. This is the psychology part coming out. Like what, how did those tests progress? Like, did they change the questions, or did they ask the exact same questions every time? And she just could not answer the same questions every time. So how much money that she had on the board? She had $1,200.
$1,200. Yep. And that's what Hannah said that she took. So even before anybody knew what was on the board, because this was, you know, like before, not necessarily before the report was filed, even though she did go into the apartment before the report was filed. But I guess probably shortly after the report was filed. So when everybody was still, you know, kind of fresh into this is a real thing, and you're over here at work telling people that you went into her apartment and took $1,200, yeah, like just in casual conversation, like that's a normal thing that somebody would do.
And keepsakes, right? Like,
right. Yeah.
Which is,
and the thing was, she, so she claims that
she's coming back, right?
Right. And she claims that Tyler had given her permission to take some stuff or whatever, which would have been, you know, again, after the report was filed, because Tyler was still in Metro when the report was filed. Mm-hmm. It wasn't out until the next week. And he did say that he went over there with her. But to take things like for keepsakes, when your friend is missing and like we're having a vigil, you know, that's really, really unusual. And then when you find out, you know, that she took,
yeah,
something that was really special to Daniela, that she always wore, and, you know, that Julie had asked for back for Cora, and you refused, mm-hmm, to give it back. I mean, That's the real.
Oh, well, that's kind of crappy. Like, I could see maybe, okay, I'm not even going to say that I would agree with it, but I could see where if it was just like, hey, we just want this, like, you're really good friends with her, but like, we were closer because we basically were family. We wanted back, and being like,
yeah,
I'm sorry, that was my best friend or whatever.
Yeah.
Before her daughter, and you're like, no,
but, that's, you know, bracelet that she supposedly that wore all the time, that she didn't have on when she was found.
Mm-hmm.
But Hannah has this bracelet. Yeah, she was wearing it at the vigil.
Mm-hmm. Because there's no mention of it. Because she had it on like 2 weeks after the, at one of the vigils. All right. Okay, I guess just to wrap it up, because we always ask, well, one thing, and I think we talked about it in the first part, but just in case. So I did reach out to Julie to see if, she wanted to do an interview, and Julie said, you know, she would if she needed to, but she would give us permission to use whatever, you know,
right,
statement she had already previously given, because she said, I honestly don't know what else I would be able to say outside of what's already been talked about. And I said, well, do, yeah, you think that Tyler would possibly want to? And she said no. And I don't know that I blame him there, because that's a tough, right, thing. He wasn't out to be able to even stop this, you know. and we've talked, we went through the whole thing about like, there's zero way he could have been involved because he wasn't, he was in jail and he didn't have the means to be able to orchestrate something like this. So I imagine there is a lot of weight there, but she said, you know, he's trying to just really hold on to the happy memories, you know, and I'd asked you how he was doing. You said he's doing great. Cora's doing great, growing like a weed. So understandably, you know, I kind of get where they're at, but I will ask you because you were incredibly vocal about it. If there is somebody, whoever potentially responsible for this, or somebody that has information that would completely contradict this idea that it was an accident, but hasn't come forward yet, or even if they maybe thought somebody else would
lift the weight,
so that's part of the reason just, why they didn't,
you know, lift what the weight and do the right thing. It's been, you know, we're going on 7 years, and her daughter's getting older. She is going to, you know, get to a point where she wants to know what happened, not just what she's heard or whatever. Cause that is the unfortunate thing, is that people do talk, and, you know, Cora has heard some things, but nobody can really tell her what happened, you know? So she, as a child, has to form her own opinion. And if there's somebody out there that can keep her from having to do that, and knowing that, like, hey, my mom didn't just take off, or, you know, she didn't decide that this isn't what she wanted or whatever, even if it might hurt, it's something, I mean, it's, it would be less traumatic, because I'm sure anybody can understand at one point she's going to look, she's going to want to know.
That is one thing that I think from the start of it, when they were looking for her and they weren't having any luck, and then especially whenever they found her, it was like, one day her daughter is going to have these questions. Because if you're sitting there and you're watching the vigils, the regular vigils, and you guys are putting out signs and flyers everywhere, and you're running these groups, and, you know, Julie's begging the people that were with her, just talk to me about it, whatever. And all of these things. And it's like one door closed after the other. And what I constantly would think was, one day Cora is going to have these questions that nobody has the answers to. And so I can't imagine, I cannot imagine something happening to my mom and being too young to like really understand what's going on, and getting to the point where I'm like, well, what happened? She had all those goals that she was working towards, and she had just knocked off that really big milestone. So it really seems less likely that she would just willingly, voluntarily, there's the possibility that it was intentional, like leaving her there by somebody else. And so that creates a lot of doubt, and it could create a lot of trauma in and of itself.
Right. Right.
Because you do talk to kids who have been in that situation, or even kids that have absentee parents in general. So that's a hard thing to deal with. And so when you have this child that currently doesn't know to ask these questions, but will one day be looking around and being like, well, my mom's not here. All my friends have moms, but like, what happened to mine? You know, I just know that she is not here anymore. That's really sad. And maybe there's an idea there too, that like the unknown is a little better than the knowing, I guess, depending on the circumstances. But I think that should be an option.
Yeah.
You can choose to not know if you want to. So, all right. Thank you for coming in and talking to us.
If you have any information regarding Daniela Vian's case, please call the Mobile Police Department at 251-208-1750, or you can submit an anonymous tip either by text or by phone at 841-
251-0644. Or you can also reach out to us on our website at alcoldcase.com or message us on social media. And as always, all of this information will be on our episode description.
Since Alabama Cold Case Advocacy's creation, we have dedicated innumerable hours to researching and networking in an effort to provide the largest platform we can to the cases we share. We shoulder all associated expenses with Alabama Cold Case Advocacy out of our own pocket, including the subscription fees for researching and production of the Unforgotten podcast, to provide a cost-free avenue for the victims' families of those cases.
We hope you will join in our efforts to raise awareness of Alabama's missing and murdered and support these families who have been forced to carry the immeasurable loss of their loved ones and the fight for answers. If you appreciate our mission and you are inspired to make a donation, your extra support will enable the ACCA to continue our research, share the cold cases, and help those families know that they are also unforgotten.
Unforgotten is an Alabama Cold Case Advocacy podcast recorded in conjunction with Riverside FM, hosted and distributed by Red Circle to your favorite podcast platforms. Content, research, artwork, and production are by Sellers and Stormy of Alabama Cold Case Advocacy. Credits for music, sound clips, special mentions, and research sources can be found in each episode's description. Your support helps us continue producing Unforgotten and further Alabama Cold Case's mission of advocacy and awareness. There are a few ways you can help us light the path. Make a one-time or monthly donation to Unforgotten through Red Circle. Sign up for a one-time or recurring donation through the ACCA website. Or subscribe to the Unforgotten Patreon channel for early access to ad-free episodes. You will find the links for all three in our episode descriptions. Another cost-free way to be of great help is to follow us on social media. But most importantly, whatever you do, tell everyone you know about these cases. Sharing their stories is one of the most effective ways to help find resolution for Alabama's cold cases. Be the spark. Thank you for listening, and until next time, remember, justice may be delayed, but the victims and their families remain unforgotten.
That was good. You did good on that one.
Thanks.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta-have-it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
You have 5 new messages. Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.